This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
The Book Club Podcast, making autumn magical with Nevermore, The Wizards of Once and The Girl with a Lost Smile, all out now.
Hello and welcome to the Fun Kids Book Club Podcast. Today's is a Halloween super special one because I'm going to be joined by the author Laura Ellen Anderson about the Amelia Fang series. We've got five spooky book picks for you and we'll be chatting to the illustrators of Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts. Plus, I think we might have time to squeeze in a reading from The Prisoner of Azkaban as well. So it's a pretty magical special podcast episode today. I thought also I would make my book trivia question pretty spooky. So the question is this. Here we go. What is the name of the author of the Goosebumps series? Now, I'm not going to give you three options because it's too easy. Come on, you know this. What is the name of the person who wrote the Goosebumps books? If you're not too sure, don't worry. I'll give you a little bit of time while I chat to Laura Ellen Anderson. So, welcome to the studio, Laura Ellen Anderson. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Thank you for coming back.
I love it here.
I make it sound like I did something really bad last time.
No, I get to talk about cereals all the time, so it's great.
That's pretty much it, isn't it? Now, you are here to talk about your brand new Amelia Fang book.
Yes.
I am so happy there is another book in the series. I should also mention for your last book, The Unicorn Lord.
Yes, yep. That's correct.
You or somebody around you sent us a unicorn cake.
Yes,
which was amazing.
Magical leprechauns at Egmont very kindly sent a unicorn cake to everyone, and myself included. I still have slices of that unicorn cake in my freezer because it was so epic.
What?
It was delicious, though. I did feel a bit bad cutting into the unicorn's head, but it was amazing.
I know, it was a massive horn, and I felt really bad about it, but also it was delicious.
Oh,
I shared it around the office, and I looked very popular, so thank you so much for that.
Oh, no worries at all.
Everybody really, they were like, wow, Bex, who are these horses you get to meet? And I was like, oh, let me tell you. They're amazing. So you've got a brand new book in the series. It's Amelia Fang and the Memory Thief.
That's correct,
yes. What is Amelia up to now?
So it is Amelia's birth night in this book, and she's really, really excited. And she's also desperate to go to Pumpkin Paradise, and there's a big baking competition going on in her school. And a new teacher has arrived. He's got a story to tell. I won't say too much. But whilst Amelia is having lots of fun baking with her friends, going on adventures and being classic lovely Amelia, something strange starts to happen. She sees some strange things in the sky and all of the people around her starting to forget things, and including her birth night party. So she needs to find out what's going on, and quickly. There's not much else I can say without spoiling the story, but think great British Bake Off in this one.
Ooh.
Lots of tasty goods, classic Amelia style, and lots of mystery and fun and adventure, and we get to see a lot more of Tangine's character. I just love the way he's developed over the past three books, and he was great fun to write in this one.
And does she still have Squishy the pumpkin?
Yes, she has Squashy indeed the
Squashy.
Pumpkin. And there is another pumpkin who we were introduced to at the last in the last book, book two, Tangine's pumpkin Pumpy, who is a genetically modified pumpkin with a little six pack. He's great fun. And instead of going pudoing, he goes pudoof. So that's our good old Pumpy.
So it must be really rubbish because people forgetting her birth night is pretty bad.
I know, and she was so excited, and all Amelia wanted was a fun birth night party in the pumpkin patch. Her mum and dad were going to organise this amazing event for her, and nobody remembers that it's her birthday.
I know you can't tell us too much, but how does she go around starting to try and get people to remember her birthday? Is there one thing that she kind of starts to do?
Yes, well, she tries to speak to her friends, but her friends are starting to forget things too, so she has to kind of work with Tangine. There's a reason why he still remembers things. Again, I can't say too much. There's a few twists and turns, but basically her and Tangine have to they take a trip to Loose Limbs Library, and that's where they find a lot of answers, so they can kind of embark on this big adventure and find out what's going on in Nocturnia.
Now, in the books themselves, I mean, if our listeners have read them, they will know already. You've jam-packed them with stuff. There's not just the words. There's loads and loads of pictures and drawings and stuff in here.
There is a lot.
How long does it take you to do it? Do you have, like, every page, and then you kind of go through and you're like, I must have something on every page, a picture or a drawing or something?
Yeah, so I start off by thumbnailing the whole book, really. So I go into the Egmont offices and I work with my lovely designer, Tiffany Leeson, and we sit and go through all of the layouts. So the text is laid out on all of the spreads. Mm-hmm. And I will say, OK, I'm going to have an illustration sweeping across the page. So let's shape the text so it's curved, and I'll fit the illustration in there. And I have like very, very, very rough thumbnails that only I understand, kind of laid out in my sketchbook. And once I have the text laid out with the gaps allowing for the illustrations, I'll go back and work on my, in Photoshop on my Cintiq and insert the illustrations. And where there's not an illustration, there might be a little vignette or a border, or the text will be inverted so it's white text on black background. I just like to keep it exciting, and so every page is something new, and to keep the reader interested and intrigued. And I like to tell the story through the illustrations as well. So where I'm not perhaps describing the setting as much, I will show rather than tell. So, and I guess that's the beauty of being able to illustrate my own books. So I love it. I love just getting completely absorbed into that world and bringing it to life through the pages.
Is there a little part of you, if maybe like writing is a bit difficult or the drawing's a bit difficult, you think it's okay, I've got the other one, I can kind of like make it easier?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So sometimes my strength when writing is definitely character building and the way the characters respond to each other. When it comes to describing a scene, I think because I am very visual, I do prefer to draw that if I'm having a little bit of trouble really kind of getting to grips with how to describe this scene in words. So yeah, it can be that I can fall back on the text if the illustration is perhaps too detailed, and vice versa, if the text is a little bit tricky, I'll draw it. So yeah, it's very handy.
Who's your favourite character to draw?
Oh gosh, I think it's definitely Florence. She is just a joy. She's my favourite to write and draw, actually. Her and Tangine, their relationship is brilliant, because, I mean, in the first book, Florence was very much, none of them really liked Tangine. And Florence was very much there for her friends, like, don't you dare insult Amelia and give her pumpkin back, blah, blah, blah. In the second book, you learn more about Tangine, and Florence is trying to teach him how to be a better friend. And then by the third book, they're all really, really good friends. The group dynamic, it works really well because they've got such kind of varying personalities that kind of work really well together. And Florence is still very much, she kind of banters with Tangine a lot. So he's very much, you know, I'm fabulous, I'm great. And she's like, oh, you, shut up. So she's fantastic. She just says things how they are, which I think is quite refreshing for a character.
And did you say there are over like 100 illustrations in this book?
Yes. So there are over 100 illustrations in all of them. I think the second book, the Unicorn Lords book, had the most so far, but the third one was very close. So I think it just, I don't know, a lot of people have said to me that they feel like this has more. I don't know if it's perhaps there's more detail in the illustrations in this book. I get a bit overexcited. I do love it. I love just getting completely lost when I'm illustrating the story and putting all the little details in the background. And Loose Limbs Library, I think, is the most detailed illustration in that book, which was great fun. But when you've got rows and rows of books, there is a little cheat just by kind of hinting at the shapes of the books. You can make it look like the shelves are full.
And you've got loads more Amelia stories to tell as well, haven't you? You've got so much more like on the horizon.
Yes. So there is most definitely books 4, 5, and 6 on the way. Book 4 publishes next March, which is very exciting. So I'm onto the illustration stage of that, which it's all happened so fast. Book 1 published barely a year ago.
Wow,
and
yeah.
I'm actually working out the structural kind of plot for book 5 right now. So, and I have an idea for book 6 too. So yes, Amelia is still going strong, which is great.
I've done the which Amelia fan character are you on the website. Turns out I'm Amelia.
Are you Amelia?
Apparently.
That's fantastic.
Which one have you done the quiz?
I am Grimaldi, and I kind of knew that would happen because Grimaldi is mostly like me, because he's scared of everything and panics, and I'm not very brave, and I'm not very brave. I'm scared. I am scared of everything, and small and like weak.
Fine, that's fine. Now, the last time you were here, you did my author quiz.
Yes,
so
I remember.
I don't want to make you do that again because I, you know, we found out a lot about you. But I do have another quiz, if that's okay.
Yes,
this is a Halloween themed quiz because it's nearly Halloween. So I thought, I reckon you'll boss this. To be honest, I reckon you'll absolutely smash it.
I hope so.
but let's just find out,
shall
we?
Go for it.
Okay, so I thought this would follow the theme of Amelia and the world she lives in. So, what is the fear of Halloween called? I'll give you some. Do you know this one already? Or?
Fear of Halloween.
Is it A, trichodecaphobia? Ooh. Is it B, Samhainophobia? Or is it C, Hallows Complex?
Oh my. I'm going to go with A.
Trichodecaphobia?
Yes.
Sadly not. No. It was Samhainophobia.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was going to go for C if not. I never knew that. Well, I've learned something new today.
I think Samhain was like an old-fashioned way of saying Halloween.
Wow.
Apparently.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. This is the one I got wrong. What do pumpkins grow on? Is it A, stalks, B, trees, or C, vines?
It's vines.
It is, it? Yes.
Yes.
I thought so, in my head.
I've been drawing a lot of vines, so I hope so.
Can you imagine if you found out in book four it was all wrong?
No.
True or false? A ghost of Henry VIII has been known to haunt Madame Tussauds.
I'm going to go with true just because that sounds quite exciting.
That's false. I made that. True or false? There are places in Canada where it's illegal to go trick or treating.
I'm going to say false.
It's true. Finally, what vegetable was originally used instead of a pumpkin for a jack-o'-lantern?
Butternut squash.
It
or
was
something
it was
else.
A turnip. Oh, so along those
turnips.
Lines. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that'll goodness do. Me. I was reading that. I can't believe it. Well,
it's a root vegetable. It's the same thing.
Terribly.
So maybe next time,
yes.
I'll
do some research.
I'll talk you through some Halloween things.
Yes.
That'll work. It's fine.
I'm ashamed of myself.
But we should say, so Amelia Fang and the Memory Thief is out super soon, I believe.
Yes, 4th of October.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so that has come around very, very fast.
And if anybody wants to know what it looks like, first of all, it's a beautiful book. Secondly, it's green on the outside.
Shiny green. Yeah, I was so happy when I got my advance copies. I was like, this is so gothic-y and Halloween-y. So yeah, look for the shiny emerald green in the shops.
It is perfect. So Laura, thank you so much for popping by the studio.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Thank you. Thank you very much to Laura Ellen Anderson. Check out the Amelia Fang books. They are brilliant. Next up, it's time to welcome Imogen into the studio. Imogen is our resident book expert, and she's got some spooky Halloween picks.
So our first book for Halloween, the Halloween period, is Death in the Spotlight by Robin Stevens. Now, of course, Robin was talking all about this book in the October edition of the book club. So you guys will already know what's going on with Daisy and Hazel. But if you haven't taken the time to take a listen quite yet, what is going on is that Daisy and Hazel are starring in Romeo and Juliet together. So they're making their first debut performance on stage at the Rue Theatre. But basically, jealousy and threats and a few nasty pranks kind of spiral out of control and a body is found. So Daisy and Hazel have to work together as a team to solve the crime before the murderer can strike again. Obviously, this is the seventh in the Murder Most Unladylike series. So if you have read the other ones, you are going to love this too. And if you haven't read these before, why not start on Halloween?
Sounds pretty good. And what's the next book?
The second book in my Halloween picks is Wiggett's Wonderful Wax World, Terror Train by Terry Deary, who you might have heard of before because he is the author of Horrible Histories. Now, the cover is beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's very Halloween-y. It's black. It's kind of embossed with all these metallic colours and it's got a piercing blue eye looking through a keyhole. So it's definitely one that draws your eye and makes you want to pick up. And the story is a tale of spooky twists and an adventure following Boy, who is the crime college's best thief. Now, the master thief has sent Boy on a mission to steal a mobile phone from Arthur Loaf's shadowy glass tower in Wild Pool. He does manage to complete the mission, but this is far from the end of the journey. Not only are the police after Boy, but there seems to be a girl trapped in the phone. Boy climbs on the terror train, but he soon realizes this could be a huge mistake after the girl in the phone tells him that those who climb aboard tend to disappear. In the journey, Boy meets some of history's darkest characters, including body snatchers Burke and Hare, as well as some scary pirates. So if you love a story with a hint of history in it with lots of spooky twists and turns, this is definitely one for you.
Oh, that sounds really spooky. Cool. What is the third book this week?
The next book, or should I say books, are the Amelia Fang series by Laura Ellen Anderson, who you will have heard from in this episode. So in each book, we have lots of fun adventures that follow your favourite vampire, Amelia Fang. They're brilliantly imaginative books that will transport you into the world of Amelia Fang. They're really funny as well, sometimes spooky, and with Amelia's pet pumpkin, Squashy, what is not to love? Definitely grab this series for an extra spooky Halloween.
All right, what's the fourth book you've got for us, Imogen?
Next up is You Ain't Seen Nothing Yeti by Stephen Butler.
Cool.
So, in the book, Frankie Bannister has saved the Nothing to See Here Hotel from a goblin prince, and all the hotel guests are really looking forward to a fun summer holiday of Trogmonay, which is the last day of the magical calendar. But strange, spooky, scary things start to happen after a massive snowstorm arrives with a very mysterious Yeti family. The party plans are put on hold, and lots of sinister, spooky things kind of become the main focus.
Oh, wow.
This is the second in the Nothing to See Here Hotel series, and it's just as funny and crazy as the first one. It'll have you laughing your head off, and you will be wanting to book yourself in for a night at a bonkers hotel. It's a really great read and has some amazing illustrations from Stephen Lenton all throughout the book, just to keep you on your toes.
And finally, what is your big last Halloween book?
The last book in my Halloween picks are the Magic Misfits series from Neil Patrick Harris. So the books explore magic and follow the journey of street magician Carter Locke, who doesn't believe in magic. He believes that his tricks are simply tricks and not magic at all. But after running away from his con man uncle, he finds himself alone. And Carter could actually really do with some magic at this point. It just so happens that some true magic is just around the corner. Carter meets the mysterious Mr. Dante Vernon that introduces him to five other like-minded kids who all go on to create the Magic Misfits. The team have to use their amazing talents to try and stop the evil BB Bosso stealing a magnificent, unique diamond in the first one. And in the second one, a famous psychic comes to town, and the group has to do whatever it takes to keep their home, Mineral Wells, safe. They're both fantastic reads, really magical, full of tips, codes, tricks to help you improve your own magic tricks. And if you're a young budding magician, or if you just love everything slightly spooky and magical, you will love these books.
Great stuff. Thank you so much, Imogen. I will be reading all of those books as quickly as I possibly can. Next up, Frankie had a little chat with the illustrators of Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts. It's Jim Kay and Olivia Lumlick-Gill. This is what happened.
So I'm really, really excited because I am joined now by two fantastic illustrators who have got involved in the Harry Potter universe. I'm joined by Jim Kay, who's the illustrator of the illustrated Harry Potter books, and Olivia Lumlick-Gill, who's the illustrator of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. How are you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm very, very excited.
Very well, thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm going to dive straight in and ask you the first question, Jim. You're the illustrator of the Harry Potter illustrated versions. Is that what you would call it? Or
yeah,
would you just call it Harry Potter?
Yeah. The Harry Potter illustrated books, yeah.
Harry Potter with drawings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, and how did you feel when you found out you were going to be taking on this epic task?
Honestly, terrified. I didn't realise it was all of them at first. I thought it would just be the front covers. And then I understood that it was the inside as well, which was, you know, a big deal because no one's illustrated Harry Potter before. And then it's, yeah, the whole, all of them, all seven books. So, yeah, I couldn't sleep for a good 6 months because, you know, you think, crikey, what are people going to think? And will they like it, what I'm doing? Because I love the films. Lots of people love the films. And this is very different from the film. So I was very nervous about the response of what people might think. But, yeah.
So I'd imagine when you start out as an illustrator, you are mostly doing your own stuff. But how does it work when you are taking these characters that have been created and you're working off a description that already exists?
Well, I quite like that because there's a lot of guessing work going on, because you're trying to understand what the author was thinking when he or she was writing it. And what's interesting about J.K. Rowling's work is that when she describes individual characters, the descriptions are actually very simple. There's only a few lines that's often repeated. So although you have a very vivid idea of what someone looks like, if you look at the actual text, they're very sort of slim descriptions. So you get a little bit of wiggle room there to play around and design your own things. So it's been interesting because, you know, you're trying to have a relationship with somebody that's not there, effectively. So you're on your own all day scribbling away and trying to second guess what someone was thinking when you're writing it. But the easiest way, if I'm dead honest, is you pretend you wrote the book yourself and then just go from there. But no, it's been hard work, I'll be honest, but very interesting. A big steep learning curve for me.
I mean, I love to pretend that I wrote all the Harry Potter books as well. I mean, that takes a lot of imagination, but I'm sure it takes a lot of imagination from you guys as well. And Olivia, there are so many beasts involved in Fantastic Beasts, and you know, you must have a favourite that you've really, really enjoyed working on throughout the process.
Well, it's true, there's a lot of beasts, and I think I've not seen any of the films at all. I didn't see the Fantastic Beasts film when it came out, which was sort of halfway through when I was working on the book, which was a bit odd because you think people are going to have seen the film and first of all think that it's connected to the book, which it's not really. The film has got a whole narrative of its own, and it's about how he came to make the book. I think Newt Scamander went off on his travels and all of this. And then he comes home and writes the book that I illustrated. But I was treating it really as a very separate entity, which was that it's a reference book or it's a dictionary, a bit like some of the really early printed books, which were an amalgam of real beasts and creatures that were being recorded for the first time, because obviously there was no photograph, there was no film photography and the kind of things that we have now. But they're also including these really fantastical, quite odd creatures. So it was almost like people in the 15th and 16th century didn't really distinguish between the real things and the really bizarre, you know, mystical creatures. And I think for me, what was interesting in the Fantastic Beasts is you've got creatures that are very much, for me, based on real animals. So there's a description like resembling a rhinoceros, which is the Arumpant. And so I went to study a rhinoceros and draw that, which was fantastic because I love learning about new things. And I'm not a fantasy artist. I don't know if they knew that before I I was offered the job. And I was thinking, but I'm a really literal person. I, as an artist, I always work from life. So I thought, how am I going to make these creatures which don't exist? So I looked at real animals as much as possible. And sometimes there's two or three lots of anatomy that you've got to then stick together, which can be quite difficult once you start getting into it, because you've got to make all the proportions of like a horse's leg match an eagle's legs. And then also there's the mythological kind of classical creatures that J.K. Rowling has used as well. So the manticore is one of them, the chimera. And I thought they would be really hard to do at first. I kind of put them off for a while. And actually, when I came to them, in the end, I found that I was somehow the most, some of the most difficult were the most rewarding in the end. And then there's ones I think she's made up entirely, like some little insect type creatures, like the Billywig. I've never heard of that before. And the Glumbumble and all different little ones. So it was a really quite, it's a wide ranging and very interesting project to do.
Yeah.
But like Jim, you know, it was pretty, if you start thinking too much about how many people are going to be looking at your work, whereas normally I work as an artist, so I don't, nobody has to see my work until I choose to display it somewhere, whereas this is, you're guaranteed that people are going to be seeing it. So for I think sure. You have to forget about it and just get your head down really and work hard.
So how does it feel for you when you see your own representation of one of these creatures, and then, for example, if you watch a movie and see how it's represented there, what's the kind of emotion that you go through when you see the comparison between your own creation and the one that somebody else has come up with?
Well, I was jealous of Olivia's because I saw Olivia's version of a sphinx, and I've got to do a sphinx for the next book, and it's really good. And I sort of think, I wish I'd thought of that, you know. So it's a good kick up the backside sometimes, you know. You need that push. It's inspiring, really. So, and with a good book, you want to see it taken into as many different formats as possible. So it's a bit like if you think of Alice in Wonderland, which is a very famous book, been made into plays and theatres and illustrated many times over. I think this will be a children's classic that again will be illustrated by other people and will be shown maybe, you know, in different ways in the theatre and maybe as different films as well. But how do you feel, Olivia? Do you worry?
Well, I haven't seen any of the films, I think, is the answer. I live really in the middle of nowhere, so for me to go to the cinema is like a massive effort. And I think also what was important for me was to come to it really without any preconceptions. So I sort of did my own thing. And then,
yeah, same here. You have to kind of forget everything that's gone before, don't you, to some degree, and then just start again from scratch. Reinvent it, really. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've not seen any of the other beasts, basically, but I'm going to see some in Jim's books, I think. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
I'm going to be looking out for them.
Well, fantastic. Jim and Olivia, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, it was great.
All right, I'm in a bit of a Harry Potter mood now, so let's have a reading from Prisoner of Azkaban.
Trotting towards them were a dozen of the most bizarre creatures Harry had ever seen. They had the bodies, hind legs and tails of horses, but the front legs, wings and heads of what seemed to be giant eagles with cruel steel-coloured beaks and large, brilliantly orange eyes. The talons on their front legs were half a foot long and deadly-looking. Each of the beasts had a thick leather collar around its neck, which was attached to a long chain, and the ends of all of these were held in the vast hands of Hagrid, who came jogging into the paddock behind the creatures. "Gee up there," he roared, shaking the chains and urging the creatures towards the fence where the class stood. Everyone drew back slightly as Hagrid reached them and tethered the creatures to the fence. "Hippogriffs," Hagrid roared happily, waving a hand at them. "Beautiful, aren't they?" Harry could sort of see what Hagrid meant. Once you had got over the first shock of seeing something that was half horse, half bird, you started to appreciate the hippogriff's gleaming coats, changing smoothly from feather to hair, each of them a different colour, stormy grey, bronze, a pinkish roan, gleaming chestnut and inky black. "So," said Hagrid, rubbing his hands together and beaming around, "if you want to come a bit nearer." No one seemed to want to. Harry, Ron and Hermione, however, approached the fence cautiously. "Now, first thing you got to know about hippogriffs is they're proud," said Hagrid. "Easily offended, hippogriffs are. Don't never insult one, because it might be the last thing you do." Malfoy, Crabbe and Goyle weren't listening. They were talking in an undertone, and Harry had a nasty feeling they were plotting how best to disrupt the lesson. "You always wait for the hippogriff to make the first move," Hagrid continued. "It's polite, see? You walk towards him, and you bow, and you wait. If he bows back, you're allowed to touch him. If he doesn't bow, then get away from him sharpish, because those talons hurt. Right, who wants to go first?" Most of the class backed further away in answer. Even Harry, Ron, and Hermione had misgivings. The hippogriffs were tossing their fierce heads and flexing their powerful wings. They didn't seem to like being tethered like this. "No one?" said Hagrid, with a pleading look. "I'll do it," said Harry. There was an intake of breath from behind him, and both Lavender and Parvati whispered, "Oh, no, Harry, remember your tea leaves." Harry ignored them. He climbed over the paddock fence. "Good man, Harry," roared Hagrid. "Right then, let's see how you get on with Buckbeak." He untied one of the chains, pulled the grey hippogriff away from his fellows, and slipped off his leather collar. The class on the other side of the paddock seemed to be holding its breath. Malfoy's eyes were narrowed maliciously. "Easy now, Harry," said Hagrid quietly. "You've got eye contact. Now try not to blink. Hippogriffs don't trust you if you blink too much." Harry's eyes immediately began to water, but he didn't shut them. Buckbeak had turned his great, sharp head and was staring at Harry with one fierce orange eye. "That's it," said Hagrid. "That's it, Harry. Now bow." Harry didn't feel much like exposing the back of his neck to Buckbeak, but he did as he was told. He gave a short bow and then looked up. The hippogriff was still staring haughtily at him. It didn't move. "Ah," said Hagrid, sounding worried. "Right, back away now, Harry. Easy does it." But then, to Harry's enormous surprise, the hippogriff suddenly bent his scaly front knees and sank into what was an unmistakable bow. "Well done, Harry," said Hagrid, ecstatic.
We've got quite an exciting adventure series on Fun Kids called Embassy of the Dead, and here's a little extract from it.
The Corpse. 1 week earlier. There are some things in life and death that are certain. One of those things is that a man digging a hole in the dead of night is definitely up to no good. A lamp swung in the branches of a hawthorn tree, and the shadows of the headstones jumped around the overgrown graveyard. In the silence of the hour, each thrust of the shovel seemed loud enough to wake the dead that slept for eternity beneath the cold, hard earth. There was the unmistakable sound of metal scraping against wood. The huge man digging the hole grunted, straightened his back and wiped a grimy hand across his sweaty, sloping brow. He looked up as another figure stepped from the shadows, carefully avoiding the patches of wet mud. This second man had done no digging. Even in the darkness, that fact was clear as day. His sharply tailored suit was still in impeccable condition, unplucked by the prickles of the hawthorn trees and unsoiled by the fresh dirt that had been removed from the ground. The suited man watched as the remains of a partly rotted coffin was manhandled from the grave. Now it sat beside the hole. He leaned forward as his brutish accomplice began to crowbar the lid open, the damp wood separating easily from the rusty nails. A satisfied smile flickered across the suited man's face at the acrid stench of embalming fluid released from within. He reached inside and lifted the corpse's hand to the lamplight. He had found what he was looking for. "It is you," he whispered. "After all this time, it is really you." He looked at the corpse's withered and lifeless face, then reached out to brush a strand of black hair from a cold grey forehead. "Your time has come, at last."
Great stuff. If you want any more details on Embassy of the Dead, head up right now to funkidslive.com. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening to our Halloween spooktacular book club show. I should say that if you were thinking, but Bex, what was the answer to your book trivia question? Who was the author of the Goosebumps books? I can tell you, it's okay. It was R.L. Stine. Obviously, of course it was. If you got that right, give yourself a pat on the back. We'll be back super soon for another book club podcast. See you then. Happy Halloween!
The Book Club Podcast, making autumn magical with Nevermore, The Wizards of Once, and The Girl with the Lost Smile, all out now.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.